At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, as you may have seen there last week, the Black Valley in Kerry is finally to get broadband. Elon Musk has offered to provide satellite broadband on a trial basis. It's part of his much larger plan to launch Starlink, a network of 12,000 low-orbit satellites, which would potentially provide the same to the entire planet. But are our skies already too crowded? Professor Mark McCorcoran is a senior advisor at the European Space Agency, and he joins us now in News Talk. Afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, Sean. How are you?
At the moment, how many satellites, space stations, man-made objects are floating around the Earth?
Well, it's a number that changes every day. So if I tried to give you the exact number now, I'd probably be wrong. And part of that is indeed because many new satellites are being launched in these so-called mega constellations. But you have to be careful to distinguish between what we call low Earth orbit, so within a few hundred kilometers of Earth, which is where the International Space Station is. And then you've got different altitudes above that, where all the way out to geosynchronous orbit, for example, where your TV satellites and weather satellites often sit 40,000 kilometers away from the Earth. But it's on the order of, you know, thousands, a few thousands in low Earth orbit, but increasing rapidly.
Right. OK. And presumably a lot of that, though, is junk or it's non-operational.
Yeah, that's, of course, a major problem is that there are bits and pieces left over from the earlier phase of space exploration, rocket stages, defunct satellites, and there are quite a few bits of smaller debris kicking around. Some of it is, you know, tools lost overboard from the space station, but the great majority of the smaller stuff comes from collisions between satellites, defunct satellites. There have been a few of those collisions in low Earth orbit, and they, you know, sort of contrary to what you might think, where there's an explosion and it all goes away. It just creates a cloud of debris moving around in orbit at very high speed, which can be lethal to satellites or to astronauts in their spacesuits. So, yeah, there's a lot of that kind of smaller stuff, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of pieces of that.
So I imagine then that sticking up a further 12,000 satellites around the Earth, effectively massively increasing the amount up there, is going to complicate things enormously.
Yeah, it's not just one constellation. There's a whole range of them now being proposed by different private companies, but also by state enterprises. And we're actually talking there could be hundreds of thousands of these new satellites, these mega constellation satellites. Now, you know, it's kind of an interesting situation where in order to ensure that they come down, so that they're not left there forever, you want to put them in very low Earth orbit. So there's a little bit of Earth's atmosphere which can grab a hold of them and slowly pull them down. They might have lifetimes of only 5 years, but that at least ensures that the debris is removed on a reasonable timescale. The flip side to that is in order to cover the Earth with internet accessibility, for example, with satellites which are very close to the Earth, they can only see a small footprint on the Earth, and you just need many more of them. Whereas a TV satellite, which can supply the whole of Europe, for example, sitting at geostationary, it could just be one satellite. Mm. So it's it's good to have them in very low Earth orbit so you get rid of them, but you just end up with more of them in the first place.
Yeah, but though at the same time, is that a danger to other objects in low Earth orbit? Isn't the space station, for instance, in low Earth orbit?
Absolutely. And in fact, we move the space station regularly. We typically know days in advance when there might be what we call, technical term, is a conjunction between things which might hit each other. These things are not sort of bumping into each other. They might be hitting at speeds of 10 to 20 kilometers per second, right? So these are high speed bullets, effectively, much faster than a bullet coming out of a gun. So we move the space station. We routinely move our other satellites. A lot of people, you know, they think about satellites, things about GPS, right? They might think about their TV. But there's lots of low Earth orbit satellites that we use for Earth observation, for monitoring crops, for monitoring ozone, for monitoring climate change. And a lot of those occupy that zone sort of around 400 to 500 kilometers, because you want to be close to the Earth to get the best pictures you can. So we are seeing that we're having to move our satellites, the ones from European Space Agency and other agencies, we have to move them much more often now because there's just more stuff up there.
What, say, Elon Musk is proposing, will those satellites be movable?
Well, in principle, Starlink should have some kind of autonomous recognition that it might be getting close to a collision. Now, of course, you can't do it in the last second. That's way too late then. So exactly how that system's supposed to work, we don't know. And that's a problem, because if you're not sharing that information, how can we know to move our satellites? And when you launch so many of them, you only have to have a few failures, at which point they're not controlled anyway. They just become rogue satellites. And that's the problem of the space debris. So this is creating a major headache for many of us. And I say, you know, it's one thing to say, well, just move your satellite. Well, it takes propulsion to move a satellite. So that then lowers the lifetime of our working satellites. So there's no sort of, there's no free lunch here. You can't just say, well, we'll all learn to get on happily together. It's not just one thing where you say, well, okay, it might destroy a satellite. That's worth the risk. If you have a major collision in low Earth orbit, and you create this big cloud of fragments moving on, it's much bigger now, and it can hit another satellite, destroy that. And that then creates another cloud. It's the thing we call the Kessler syndrome, where actually, if this happens, within the space of days, you might wipe out everything in low Earth orbit. I mean, many people have seen the film Gravity with George Clooney and Sandra Bullock a few years ago, and that featured in that film. And this is a real threat. It's getting worse every day. Mm-hmm. So you know, we're engaged now in ESA, at least. The best we can do is think about active removal, active debris cleaning, and we've got a program for that. But the new launches are sort of outrunning our ability to get the other ones down. So it's definitely worrying.
Similarly, people every now and again, you're told, you know, you can see the International Space Station tonight because it's passing overhead. If Elon Musk puts 12,000 of these in the sky, would they be permanently visible from the ground?
It was a big question at the beginning of this whole launching of mega constellations, because the Starlink satellites were very bright to begin with, and you'd see trains of them moving across the sky. And I remember the first time I saw one, I sort of went, oh, that's cool. Oh, actually, it's not at all. It's nice to see, but when you consider, you know, that's just a few, 60, but you've got thousands of them. So there has been some work done to mitigate the visible brightness, and they're kind of getting down to the limit of naked eye visibility now in a dark place. And most people live in cities, you know, and unfortunately, they don't get to see the night sky. But for astronomers, it's a very big issue, because that might be amateur astronomers taking wide field pictures of the night sky, and they do some beautiful work. But for visible astronomers at visible wavelengths from the ground or even from space, we can see these satellites in images taken by the Hubble Space Telescope, for example. So we can see them passing by. And also for radio astronomy, because these satellites are all broadcasting radio signals, is how they communicate the data. There's a real danger that they will see so many of them that they will make our astronomy data unusable, because we can see very, very faint objects, and these things are very bright relatively. Mm. So we're working very hard with various groups here in Europe, the European Astronomical Society, the Royal Astronomical Society in the UK, with American groups as well, who are very concerned, because we're building big telescopes to do science, to bring more understanding about the universe, and that could be badly affected by these constellations. So it's a real concern.
All of this begs the question, who regulates all of this, or does anyone regulate all of this?
Yeah, it's a great question. And unfortunately, of course, there are regulations of certain things. So you'll have the people who regulate launches. Can you launch a rocket? And, you know, they don't necessarily think about the consequence of what you're putting in space, but there'll be another agency which will say, well, which radio frequencies are you going to use? We need to make sure that you're not broadcasting on frequencies which have been reserved for other uses, whether that's astronomy or other satellites using, you know, for other data. But they're not really joined up. And so in a way, you can kind of move the pieces on the chessboard and say, well, I've satisfied this one. I now move to that one. And I think it is important that we need to think about the consequences of this. I mean, I know that the story was provoked by this promise that you might bring broadband internet to people who don't have it readily accessible in Ireland. That's true around the world. But, you know, it's no such thing as a free lunch. What are the consequences? And then we're moving so quickly now with this that it, bringing new regulations, new agencies in, it all might be too late. There may be tens, 20,000 of these things up there before we've even got our act together. So that's, yeah. And I do wonder a little bit whether some of the actors in this game are deliberately launching as quickly as possible before we can get our act together. But that's maybe a bit cynical.
In terms of what you were saying previously about, if you like, cleaning up the space junk, what are the potential solutions to that?
Well, for, you know, the first thing is to make sure that any satellite that goes up can deorbit itself so that, it has an active method of bringing itself down, which means reserving a little bit of propulsion in the tanks, or making sure you have any propulsion at all, because some systems like the Hubble Space Telescope, for example, don't have any onboard propulsion. So for those, we need to actively go and get them. Now, that might be physically grabbing them, and we've got some programs at European Space Agency for rendezvousing with satellites, grabbing a hold of them, and then essentially giving them a nudge so that they're slowed down and they fall out of orbit naturally. Others, you might be able to do things with small amounts of debris by hitting them with lasers from the ground, strangely enough, kind of lighting them up. But if you, with a powerful enough laser, you can slow them down and you have the same effect. So yeah, we're looking at this, but you need people. It's much like recycling and getting rid of your rubbish. Everybody likes a new shiny toy, but nobody likes cleaning up the mess that when it's 10 years old and it's just lying around anymore. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, so you need an agent, you need somebody to step in and say, look, when you buy a new car, you will be paying for the recycling at the end of it. You can't just have the new car. You've got to think about the life cycle. Mm. And that's the key thing.
I imagine that you know, giving a satellite a nudge is one thing, but if it's just a bolt, which is tiny, but which could do tremendous damage to the International Space Station, can those things be even detected?
Well, we can see pretty small objects, actually, with radar from the ground. There are people that do, you know, we monitor bits. So we can see things down to sort of the few centimeter level. But even a fleck of paint or a small bolt, as you say, can be very dangerous. So when I'm thinking about our astronauts going outside, you know, everybody thinks the most risky thing about being an astronaut is the launch, going up and coming back. But actually, in many cases, it's a spacewalk, because there you're in a spacesuit that can protect you from space, but a high speed bullet, no, they can't. So there's that danger. No, there's a lot of smaller pieces which we just don't know about, and that's absolutely the point. Is that if we keep putting stuff up there and they collide and create more of this small scale stuff, it can have this runaway. So it is a tricky thing. And that's what we're seeing at the moment. We're seeing people all competing for a slice of the same market. And what's weird about it is, in order to compete in this market, you actually have to cover the world. Even if you only want to launch satellites to cover Europe, say, or China. And that's why, you know, the state actors are launching them as well, because they don't like the idea it's all in the control of monopolies, like, you know, a billionaire in America. But by the very nature of it, you need to launch them to cover the whole Earth, because they're in low Earth orbit. They're going to spin around the whole sky. So what we're doing is we're all kind of competing with each other to launch constellations which might only serve one market. But by definition, they pollute everybody's sky. And that, you know, that's the sort of crazy issue about this. It's a very bad gold rush effect here.
Professor Mark McCorcran is a senior advisor for science and exploration at the European Space Agency. Mark, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Sean. Thanks.
Moncrief on News Talk.